Hello, and thank you for calling Drunk and Dangerous. Tonight, we'll be reading Eye of Argon, part... What is it, four now? Five? Eye of Argon, part whatever. We're on chapter 7. Hopefully, this one isn't as fucking long as the last one. Sorry, I don't know why I'm doing this voice. Sometimes it's just fun to do. So, yes, whatever that annoying voice lady said, hi guys, what's up? It is Dangerous ASMR, and we are back for another Drunk and Dangerous, as you could probably tell from that very strange voice rant thing I just did. I am a little not sober, as per the usual, and today we are continuing our fabulous journey deeper and deeper into the heart of the amazing, fantastic novella that is The Eye of Argon. It's so beautiful. And when we last left off, Grignr and our fair French, whatever her name was, like Catherine or something, I don't remember, started with a C. Not the mean C. cunt, that's the word I mean, cunt. No, it was Catherine or, I don't know, fuck it. We're on part 7. Let's start before I dig myself a deeper hole. A deeper hell hole. Before I dig myself an even deeper hellhole. Okay. I can do this. I had my courage. I had to drink my courage right there. Liquid courage. Okay. Chapter 7. With wobbling knees and swimming head, the priest that had lapsed into an epileptic seizure rose unsteadily to his feet. I'm surprised they brought him back. I thought he was going to be dead. But then he didn't get his head ripped off yet, so that's why he's alive. While enacting his choking fit in writhing agony, the shaman was overlooked by Grignr. The barbarian had mistaken the seizure for the death throes of the acolyte. Oh, God. I'm a Grignr. Oh, no. Oh, no. I am clearly too intoxicated for this. If I'm doing Grignr-level thinking... Oh, God. I still don't think ripping off heads are good, so I think maybe I'm a little bit above him still. I hope. God, we can only hope. Allowing the priest to avoid his stinging blade. The sight that met the priest's inflamed eyes nearly served to sprawl him upon the floor once more. The sacrificial sat it grim, blood splattered silence all around him, broken only by the occasional yelps and howls of his maimed and butchered fellows. Above his head rose the hideous idol, its empty socket holding the shaman's effurbished, infuriated gaze. Okay. I could be incorrect. I don't think that this is because I am high and a little tipsy, that effurbished is an appropriate description, but the first thing I thought was refurbished, but that doesn't make sense. His gaze was effurbished. If it's a word, like, that's kind of impressive. Am I the only one that doesn't know that word? I'm either just ignorant or it's not a thing. His gaze turned to a stony glaze, or his eyes turned to a stony glaze. He loves to say stony glaze all the time, with the realization of the pillage and blasphemy. Due to his high susceptibility following the seizure, the priest was transformed into a raving maniac, bent solely upon wreaking vengeance. Wait a second. So is he saying that after you have a seizure, you're highly susceptible to becoming a raving maniac bent solely upon having vengeance? Like, what's the statistical likelihood? What's the difference? Can you imagine if that was scientifically accurate? Like, anybody who had a seizure, they're like, do not upset them. At any moment of being upset, their susceptibility to becoming a raving maniac goes through the roof. Like, that's how the zombie plague starts. A bunch of people having seizures and then becoming frothing maniacs bent solely on revenge. Like, God, way to make, you know, demonize poor people with epileptic fits. Like, Jesus Christ, they have it hard enough already, you asshole. With lips curled and quivering, a crust of foam dripping from them. That happened really fast. I don't want to say anything, but if the foam is kind of like crusting, then he probably had foam in his mouth before this even started. Or it's just a special type of high crusting foam. That's also equally likely in this story. The acolyte drew a long, wicked-looking, jewel-hilted scimitar from his silver girdle and fled through the aperture in the ceiling, uttering a faintly perceptible ceremonial gibberish. It's ceremonial gibberish. With how does that differ from regular gibberish? Like, dear Heavenly Father, we are here today. What the fuck? All right, that's a thing. 7.5. A sweeping scimitar swung towards Grignr's head in a shadowed blur of motion. With axe raised over his head, Grignr prepared to parry the blow while gaping wide-eyed in open-mouthed perplexity. I'm picturing him like a fish. You know, like a fish that was caught and she's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Suddenly a sharp snap resounded behind the frothing shaman. The scimitar, halfway through its fatal sweep, dropped from a quivering, nerveless hand. Oh God, his hand had been paralyzed. Clattering harmlessly to the stone edge. Cutting his screech short with a bubbling, red-mouthed gurgle, the lacerated acolyte staggered under the pressure of the released springboard. After a moment of hopeless struggling, the shaman buckled, sprawling face down in a widening pool of blood and entrails, his regal purple robe blending enhancingly with the swirling streams of crimson. So, apparently, his robe blended enhancingly. So it must look pretty damn good. Like, the pools of blood look good before, but once you add the purple robe, mwah, fucking bon appetit, chef. Excellent choice. Fucking blends enhancingly. I wish there'd been blood there the whole time. We were missing out.
Merrific. I thought I had killed the last of those dogs,
muttered Grignr in a half apathetic state. So I guess he just kind of cared, kind of didn't.
Nay, Grignr, you doubtless grew careless while giving vent to your lusts. But let us not tarry any long, lest we overtax the fates. The path leading to freedom will soon be barred. The wretch's cries must have certainly attracted unwanted attention.
The wench mused.
By what direction shall we pursue our flight?
I assume it's Grignr. I don't know.
Up that stair and down the corridor, a short distance is the concealed entrance to a tunnel seldom used by others than the prince, and known to few others save the palace's royalty. It is used mainly by the prince when he wishes to take leave of the palace in secret. It is not always in the prince's best interest to leave his chateau in public view. Even while under heavy guard, he is often assaulted by hurtling stones and rotting fruits.
That's like me, every day. God damn, my neighbors are assholes.
The commoners have little love for him. Lectured the Nair Lady,
whatever that is. I want to change that N with the W and make it what lectured the Ware Lady, and that would make this story way more interesting. But no, she's a Nair Lady. N-E-R-E, lady, one word, exclamation point. So.
It is amazing that they would ever have left a pig like him become their ruler. I should imagine that his people would rise up and crucify him like the dog he is. Alas, Grignr, it is not as simple as all that. His soldiers are well paid by him. So long as he keeps their wages up, they will carry out his damned wishes. The crude implements of the common folk would never stand up under the onslaught of forged blades and protective armor. They would be going to their slaughter.
Oh, this is her name. Stated Carthina, I don't remember what I said. Catherine? Carthena is like the made-up version of Catherine, so. Stated Carthena to a confused but angered Grigner as they topped the stairway.
Yet how can they bear to live under such oppression? I would sooner die beneath the sword than live under such a dog's command,
added Grigner as the pair stalked down the hall in the direction opposite that in which Grigner had come. Thank you for telling us.
But all men are not of the same mold that you are born of. They choose to save as they are so as to save their filthy necks from the chopping block,
returned Carthena in a disgusted tone as she cast an appeased glance toward the stalwart figure at her side whose left arm was wound dexterously about her slim waist, his slowly waning torch casting their images in intermingling wisps as it had dangled from his left hand. That was a pretty long description there. Also, Carthena, stop fucking judging people. Have you walked a mile in their shoes? No, you haven't, bitch. Goddamn, Carthena the cunt, she is the other C word. I do not like Carthena and Grigner. Actually, they're a pretty good couple. He cuts people's heads off. She's super judgy. Presently, Carthena came upon the panel, concealed amongst the other granite slabs and discernible only by the burned-out cresset above it.
As I push the cresset aside, push the panel inwards.
Caterina motioned to the panel she was referring to and twisted the cresset in a counterclockwise motion. Grigner braced his right shoulder. Grigner braced his right shoulder against the walling, concentrating the force of his bulk against it. The slab gradually swung inward with a slight grating sound. Carthena stooped beneath Grigner's corded arms and crawled upon all fours into the passage beyond. Grigner followed after easing the slab back into place. Winding before the pair was a dark, musty tunnel, exhibiting tangled spider webs from its ceiling to wall and an oozing, sickly slime running lazily upon its floor. Fucking gross. Hanging from the chipped wall upon Grigner's, the R is very prominent here, right side was a half-moldered corpse, its gray flacking arms held in place by rusted iron manacles. Carthena flinched back into Grigner's arms at sight of the leering set in an ugly, distorted grimace. Staring horribly at her from hollow, gaping sockets.
This alcove must also be used by Agafem as a torture chamber. I wonder how many of his enemies have disappeared into these haunts, never to be heard from again, pondered the...
Oh, sorry, it was Grigner. He's not French, so forget that.
This alcove must also be used by Agafem as a torture chamber. Did you like my French accent? I've been practicing really hard anyway. As I was saying, I wonder how many of his enemies have disappeared into these haunts, never to be heard from again.
Pondered the hulking brute. He was very talented at mimicking voices in a very short period of time.
Let us flee before we are also caught within Agafem's ghastly clutches. The exit from this tunnel cannot be very far from here.
Oh, shit, I didn't say it with a sad...
Let us flee before we are also caught within Agafem's ghastly clutches. The exit from this tunnel cannot be very far from here,
said Carthena with a slight sob to her voice as she sagged in Grigner's encompassing embrace. Oh, my God, bitch.
Oh, Grigner, rescue me. I'm so scared of walking.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'll continue.
Aye. It will be best to be finished with this corridor as soon as it is possible. But why do you flinch from the sight of death so merrift?
He says now, which I don't know if that's merrific, but
merrift. You have seen much death this day without exhibiting such emotions,
exclaimed Grigner as he led her trembling form along the dingy confines. Yeah, it's called a fucking play. She's playing you, man. She's pretending. She wants that Grigner D. Don't be a sucker, Grigner.
The man hanging from the wall was Doyanta. He had committed the folly of showing affections for me in front of Agafem. He never meant any harm by his actions.
At this, Carthena broke into a slow, steady whimpering.
choking her voice with gasping sobs. There was nothing against, nothing between us, yet Agafem did this to him. The beast made the demons of hell's deepest horns to claw away at his wretched flesh for this merciless act,
she prayed.
I detect that you felt more for this fellow than you wish to let on.
Well, no shit. Oh, good job, fucking Dr. Phil, Gregner.
But enough of this. We can talk of such matters after we are once more free to do so.
With this, Grignr lifted the grieved female to her feet and strode onward down the corridor, supporting the bulk of her weight with his surging left arm.
Yeah.
Presently, a dim light was perceptively filtering into the tunnel, casting a dim reddish hue upon the moldy wall of the passage's grim confines. Carthina had ceased her whimpering, fucking finally, and partially regained her composure.
The tunnel's end must be nearing. Rays of sunlight are beginning to seep into...
Grignr clammed his right hand over Carthina's mouth, and with a slight struggle pulled her over to the shadows of the right-hand wall of the path, while at the same time thrusting this torch beneath an overhanging stone to smother its flickering rays.
Be silent. I can hear footfalls approaching through the tunnel,
growled Grignr in a hushed tone.
Oh, let you hear the horses growling at that far end of the tunnel. That is a further sign that we are nearing our goal, she stated.
All that you hear is less than I hear. I heard footsteps coming towards us. Silence yourself that we may find out whom we are being brought into contact with.
We need to find whom we are being brought into contact with. That's an interesting way to say it, Grignr.
I doubt that any would have thought as yet of searching this passage for us. The advantage of surprise will be upon our side,
Grignr warned. Carthina cast her eyes downwards and ceased any further pursuit toward conversation, an irritating habit in which she had gained an amazing proficiency. Damn, that is a burn. Fuck. Even the person writing her is like, yeah, she's kind of a cunt. This episode brought to you by The Letter C. The letter C. It's 2020, get over, come on. All right. Let's see. Two figures came into the pair's view from around a turn in the tunnel. They were clothed in rich, luxuriant silks and rambling on in conversation while ignorant of their crouching foes waiting in an ambush ahead.
That barbarian dog is cringing beneath the weight of the lash at this moment, sire. He shall cause no more disturbance.
Aye, and so it is with any who dare to cross the path of Sargon's chosen one,
said the second man, who was also a chicken.
But the priests peasants are showing signs of growing unrest. They complain that they cannot feed their families while burdened with your taxes.
I shall teach those sluts the meaning of humility, cock. Order an immediate increase upon their taxes. They dare to question my sovereign authority. Ha-ha! They shall soon learn what true oppression can be. I will, baka!
A shadowed bulk leapt from behind a jutting promontory as it brought down a double-edged axe with the sped of a striking thought. One of the nobles sagged lifeless to the ground, skull split to the teeth. Wow, it's a different way to take their head, kind of just cleave it in half. I don't know if that's cleaner or less clean than ripping it off. I don't have enough experience in cutting into heads and cutting heads off. So if you do have experience, please tell me which is and is less messy in the comments below. And show examples of your work, please. I think the whole class would like to see. Grignr gasped as he observed the bisected face set in its leering death agonies. It was Agafund. The dead man's comrade, having recovered from his shock, drew a jewel-encrusted dagger from beneath the folds of his robe and lunged toward the barbarian's back. Grignr spun at the sound from behind and smashed down his crimsoned axe once more. His antagonist lunged howling to a stream of stagnant green water, grasping a spouting stump that had once been a wrist, hopefully in a Monty Python-esque just giant stream of fucking blood like Quentin and Tarantino's, like, god damn, that guy had a lot of blood in his body. Grignr raised his axe over his head and prepared to finish the incomplete job. Well, no shit, I hope he's not finishing a complete job. That's called overkill. But was deterred halfway through his lunge by a frenzied screech from behind. Carathena leapt the head of the writhing figure, plunging a smoldering torch into the agonized face. The howls increased in their horrid intensity, stifled by the sizzling of roasted flesh. Then died down until the man was reduced to a blubbering mass of squirming, insensate flesh. Wow. So he was burned so bad he apparently melted. I mean, he was a blubbering mass of flesh. I'm imagining him as the pool of a human, in which case he was not a human at all to begin with. I can't melt people. We're not made of wax, probably. I mean, I'm not made of wax. I don't know about you. I don't have anything against it, but it's not me. Grignor advanced to Carathena's side, wincing slightly from the putrid aroma of her vagina, of charred flesh, that rose in a puff of thick white smog throughout the chamber. If that was her vagina, that's damn impressive, girl. Carathena reeled slightly, staring dazedly downward at her gruesome handiwork.
I had to do it. It was Agafem. I had to,
she exclaimed.
Sargon should be more careful of his right-hand men, added Grignor, a smug grin upon his lips. But to hell with Sargon for now. The stench is becoming bothersome to me.
With that, Grignor grasped Carathena around the waist, leading her around the bend in the cave and into the open. A ball of feral red was rising through the mists of the eastern horizon, dissipating the slinking shadows of the night. A corral stood before the two, enclosing two grazing mares. Oh, it's a corral, but he spelled it coral. A corral stood before the two, enclosing two grazing mares. Grignor reached into a weighted-down leather pouch dangling at his side and drew forth the scintillant red emerald he had obtained from the bloated idol. Raising it toward the sun, he said,
"We shall do well with the bauble, eh?"
Carathena gaped at the gem, gasping in a terrified manner.
"The Eye of Argon! Oh, Kala!"
At this, the gem gave off a blinding glow, then dribbled through Grignor's fingers in a slimy red ooze, like Aladdin.
You know, the Cave of Wonders, you know, whatever.
You fucking know, you know, don't pretend you fucking know. Grignor stepped back, pushing Carathena behind him. Yeah, he's pissed. He's like, bitch, that was a fucking emerald, you asshole. The droplets of slime slowly converged into a pulsating jelly-like mass. A single opening transfixed the blob, forming into a leech-like maw. Then the hideous transgressor of nature...
Could you imagine if that's what people yelled at you as you're walking the street? You're a hideous transgressor of nature. Thanks, you too.
Flowed towards Grignor, a trail of greenish slime lingering behind it. The single gap puckered, repeatedly emitting a ghastly sucking sound. Grignor spread his legs into battle stance. Yeah, humping the air. That's his battle stance. Stealing his quivering thews for a battle royale, but it just said battle royal, with a thing he knew not how to fight. Carathena protector. Carathena wound her arms around her protector's neck, mumbling, "Kill it, kill," while her entire body trembled. What a useless bitch. The thing was almost upon Grignor when he buried his axe into the gristly maw. It passed through the blob and clanged upon the ground. Grignor drew his axe back with a film of yellow-green slime clinging to the blade. The thing was seemingly unaffected. Then it started to sluice up his leg, slide a noose. The hairs upon his nape stood on end from the slimy feel of the thing's... of the thing's bully bulk. It literally says the thing's B-U-L-Y... comma, bulk, the slimy feel of the thing's bully, bulk. The nauseous sucking sound became louder, and Grignor felt the blood being drawn from his body. Oh man, that thing knows how to suck a dick. With a hiss of hideous pucker, the thing increased in size. Grignor shook his foot about madly in an attempt to dislodge the blob, but it clung like a leech, still feeding upon his rapidly draining life fluid. He loves life fluid. He grasped with his hands, trying to rip it off, but only found his hands entangled in a sickly, glue-like substance. The slimy thing continued its puckering, now having grown the size of Grignr's leg from its vampiric feast. This man must be full of blood. Chock full of it. Grignr began to reel and stagger under the blob, his chalk-white face and faltering muscles attesting the gigantic loss of blood. Carthina slipped from Grignr in a death-like faint, a marrow chilling scream upon her red, rubish lips. In final desperation, Grignr grasped the smoldering torch upon the ground and plunged it into the reeking maw of the travestry. A shudder passed through the thing. Grignr felt blackness closing upon his eyes, but held on with the last ebb of his rapidly waning vitality. He could feel its grip lessening as a hideous, gurgling sound erupted from the writhing maw. The jelly-like mass began to bubble like a vat of boiling tar as quavers passed up and down its entire form. With a sloshing plop, the thing fell to the ground, evaporating in a thick scarlet cloud until it retained its original size. It remained thus for a moment as the puckered maw took the shape of a protruding red eyeball, the pupil of which seemed to unravel before it the tale of creation. How a shapeless mass slithered from the quagmires of the stigmatic pool of time, only to degenerate into a leprosy of avaricious lust. He probably had a seizure, and you know what happens when you have a seizure. In that fleeting moment, the grim mystery of life was revealed before Grignr's ensnared eyeballs. The eyeball's glare turned to a sudden plea of mercy, a plea for the whole of humanity. Then the blob began to quiver with violent convulsions. The eyeball shattered into a thousand tiny fragments and evaporated in a curling wisp of scarlet mist. The very ground below the thing began to vibrate and swallow it up with a belch. The thing was gone forever. All that remained was a dark red blotch upon the face of the earth, blotching things up. Good old blotch, always blotching things up the way them blotches do, blotchity blotch. Shaking his head, his shaggy mane to clear the jumbled fragments of his mind, Grignr tossed a limp female over his shoulder. She went limp. Of course she did. Of course she did. She's limp. The entire description about this bitch is limp. I am overly upset about that. Mounting one of the disgruntled mares, as he usually does, they're usually disgruntled, no difference there, and leading the other, the weary, scarred barbarian trooted slowly off. Troot-toot-toot. Into the horizon, to become a tiny pinpoint in a filtered field of swirling blue mists, leaving the nobles, soldiers, and peasants to replace the missing monarch. Long live the king. The end. Now, it could be that I read every part of that intoxicated, but I do not understand what that story was about, how any of the beginning really foreshadowed or played into anything that happened at the end. So, Eye of Argon, 10 out of 10. It was fantastically, fantastically bad, and I would read it again any fucking day because it's so fucking terrible. All right. Thank you guys so much. The Eye of Argon is over. That was amazing. Thank you so much for listening with me. I had such a freaking blast. I'll be back next week with a Nails and Gale written by Ike Moore. And I think the week after that I have like a GFE planned. But yeah, then I'm more drunk and dangerous. And if there's anything that you really want to see me read, just DM me or message it below, whatever, and I'll take a look and consider it. All right, I love you guys, and I will talk to you next week. Mwah. Bye.